What's going to power our everyday commutes in the next decade and beyond? Where are cities headed towards as a number of mobility solutions and challenges proliferate? These are some of the big questions that we explore in Moving Cities, a podcast on the future of mobility presented to you by Eden Strategy Institute. Here at Eden Strategy Institute, we collaborate with the world's most successful organizations to sustain their growth through business system innovation. In Moving Cities, we'll take you along the journeys of innovators, experts, and veterans in the smart cities and urban mobility space, as they have tested, led, and experimented with new mobility initiatives in their cities. My name is Callista Tony, Mobility Lead at Eden Strategy Institute. Thanks for tuning in to Moving Cities. Today, we'll be looking at the journey of Buenos Aires and their efforts to increase road safety, walkability, and cycling. Joining us in this episode is Paula Bisio, Undersecretary of Sustainable and Safe Mobility for the Buenos Aires City Government, who led this transformative journey in Buenos Aires. She developed the first road safety plan for the city and is also in charge of the Gender and Transport Agenda, which aims to equalize job opportunities and improve women's mobility conditions. Paula, it's a real pleasure to have you with us. Let's start with that last point, the role that gender plays in mobility. Can you give us some examples of how women's mobility differs from men's mobility?
Here, women take care of all the mobility of children and older people, and they also take care of buying things for the house. So they tend to move more than men. Here, we did some surveys, and women do like 6 trips a day versus men that just do 2 trips a day. So men tend to go from work to home, and women do other things because they take care of others, to work and to study, but also taking care of others. So there's a difference there. Also, when you are talking, like, they are moving with kids or, for example, with the things that they bought for the house, they need space, for example, in the buses. We have to design better the buses for them to be able to go into the bus with a child in her arm and maybe another one in the other hand. We actually sometimes see as normal, but when you study, you see that really there are a lot of differences. So the government, what can we do? Well, we can design better buses. We can also give education to drivers of the buses. Here, I talk a lot about buses because here in Buenos Aires, 60% of the trips are done by bus. So it's one of the most important way of transportation, but we also have subway. So if you are carrying a baby, for example, and you have a trolley, if you don't have an elevator or if you don't have a good escalator, then it's very difficult, for example, to take the subway or to take the bus if you don't have a space to put it, right? So we have to design better buses and a subway, thinking about it. And also here in Buenos Aires and in Argentina in general, we have a lot of subsidy for the public transportation. But take into account for the subsidy in general, more like longer trips. So for example, we have people that had to ride for 1 hour and a half in a bus or different kind of buses to get to work. So there we have a lot of subsidies for that people because we know they live very far away from work. But women tend to do shorter trips, more trips, but shorter because they go to home, to school, then the school, to their job, then to the job to pick up the grocery, then to the home. We have to also look at that more precisely and see if we can help also women because they spend much more money in the public transportation. Then other thing is we realize we don't have a lot of women actually, neither in the important places, decision-making places, and also in all the, for example, driver's jobs that you have in transportation, that there is a lot, we tend to have only men driving buses, taxis, subway, planes. Here we see a big, big difference, and it's just a matter of a culture thing to think that just men can do it. So the government, we started now doing public policy to encourage women that want this kind of job to do it, and also to help them with some subsidies for getting the driver's license.
It's really encouraging to hear that the Buenos Aires city government is looking for thoughtful ways to support women's mobility needs. whether it's through subsidies for bicycle purchases or bicycle education workshops. How did you actually realize that there was a need for these things within the population?
When you talk about people-centric design, if you say people, there's like too many people, and actually we have different needs. And when you think a city for all, it's very common to think a city of for all, to think like 880 cities, so for kids of 8 years old to older people of 80 years old. But then you have to start, I think, looking at these and small groups, small or not that small. Women, we are more than 50%, right? But when, it's important to start looking for groups of people so you will find what they need. What do you have to do? Study and make a lot of surveys, serious surveys, so you will listen to their voice. When you are looking at women, for example, we understood that women were suffering a lot of harassment, sexual harassment in public space and public transportation. And it was terrible because really 100% of the women that were inquired, they said that they had suffered sexual harassment in public transportation or in public space once in their life at least. And when I started talking about this, all the women, different ages, no matter what class, everybody said, yes, it is true. I suffered once or more. But when you were looking at the police station or different places where you can actually go and say, I suffered sexual harassment, no women were really denouncing. So this is why I think we need to actually start asking questions, because sometimes people don't say it. And maybe they live with it, and sometimes they think it's normal because it was always like this. So I think if you want to a people center, you really need to be in the streets a lot, looking what is going on in different kind of places, in very crowded places and very commercial places and others that are not, and also asking a lot of questions about everything. I think that is the key. Then thinking about the bike, also actually what happened is that we started doing this public policy to develop biking to work 10 years ago, more or less. At the beginning, nobody was moving on a bike. We just had 0.4% of the trips done by bike. It was not happening. When we asked people, we found out that everybody, almost every house, had at least one bike in their home. Because actually they are not moving by bike, but it was something in our culture to learn how to ride a bike at 5 years old. Everybody had a bike. We asked them, would you use your bike to go to work if we had a cycle path, if it was safe for you to ride? And people were saying, yes, I would. But at that time, we didn't have any cycle path, just some in the parks for recreational reasons. So that was how we started constructing cycle paths. And now we have a network of more than 230 kilometers in the city. It's quite a dense network in the city center and around the city center, but we need to do much more far away from the city center, of course. It's not completely done yet. We now have 4% of the trips done by bike every day. So in 10 years, it changed really a lot.
That's really incredible to hear, Paula. I'm just wondering, how do you ensure that you include the lower income segments of the population in your mobility plans in the midst of all of this change?
It depends where you live. Buenos Aires is 200 square kilometers, and Buenos Aires, we are 3 million people living in Buenos Aires, but you have also 3 million people coming every day to work. In general, most poor people come from outside of Buenos Aires, and that's one of the challenges we have. That is to create a metropolitan transport agency, to be able to connect everything, because it's difficult to solve all the problems from this city only. The truth is also we have 800 kilometers of metropolitan rail train. So the national government these past 4 years has been investing a lot to modernize a little bit the rails of the trains. So these trains are moving faster and safer. That will be a big, big change. And it's being a change for the most poor people that travel a lot to come to Buenos Aires to work. And also we are working on trying to get all the bus system like a better, more efficient and better quality of buses, because we really rely on buses for people to move around the metropolitan area and in the city, more than 15,000 buses. So it's more or less like London. It's one of the most important and developed bus networks. What is great that is that the network is everywhere and it's running 24/7. Then we need to have improving much more the quality of the trip. We just started to have this year the information on when the buses are arriving. I know in Asia it's very well done, but we have the information on the smartphone. And here people tend to have smartphones, so you can look before going from home to work, or you can look at the bus stop in your smartphone when the bus is arriving.
I can definitely resonate with the need for clarity about my travel time. So it's wonderful to hear that citizens in Buenos Aires now have access to that kind of information to better plan their journeys. One thing I'm sure that city leaders who might be tuning in are curious about, though, is funding. These quality improvements, the expansion of networks, the operation of a free bicycle sharing system are all really big expenses. How do you find the funding needed to carry out these improvements? And what role do you think the private sector plays in financing this?
For the bike sharing system, it's a private company that participates on a bid. And the funding comes from publicity and sponsorship mainly. And then the government also pays for the rights of people. We subsidize a third part of the cost of the system, paying for people's bike rides. The other part of the financial system comes from sponsorship in the bike. And then they also have like 500 publicity spaces in the city that they can sell. This is how it's financed. Historically, the government financed the public transportation. And if the bus ticket is not very expensive, how much can you actually make people pay for a bike ride? Not that much. So we prefer actually to still subsidize this thing, because we think we can get to 7% of our trips, 10% of our trips done by bike. And for that, we still need to promote it a lot.
Right. So with that being said, what are the key technologies and infrastructure elements that you rely on in your mobility plan? Are those more practical and simple things like separated bike lanes, or are we talking about more sophisticated ones like sensors and that nature of equipment?
Yes, the most important thing, of course, is infrastructure. That's the basic thing. I think in Buenos Aires City, we already have a very good infrastructure in all the city. Of course, you can always redesign a lot of crossing, and this is something that is very acupunctural work that we still need to do to have safer cities. And then for technology, I think the important thing is to have information and to share information, to open information. And we are moving into that kind of system where we can give information to private developers, and they can bring and create different kind of solutions to share with the people. That is our main focus. When we think about sensors, I think in 5 or 10 years, it would be great to have sensors all over the city, in traffic lights and in cars, and that we can connect everything. We can have streets that are flexible and that can change a lot during the day if needed. It's something we are starting to do, but maybe, I don't know, it will take also like 10 years to develop all around the city. Also because our cars are quite old. I think this is because we are very far away and it's very expensive to develop things in Argentina. To have all our cars and buses with sensors that can talk to the traffic lights, it will take a little bit of time. But of course, we want to go on that direction. And another main thing for us is safety, road safety. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people dying every year in Buenos Aires because of traffic accidents. The most important thing for the sensors is road safety, real-time information, and making the infrastructure more flexible, the streets more flexible to change when needed. We already have a lot of streets that change directions if it's in the morning or at night. That is something we already do. And the only thing that we do is we change traffic lights. Of course, a lot of communication. People know when they change. And we couldn't not change it every day as we wish. For example, in Buenos Aires, we have a lot of strikes, manifestations on the streets. I mean, 20 per day. So the streets are cut all the time, you know, it changes. And you need to change some streets of direction at that moment so people can move. If not, they get stuck. And this is something we do with the traffic agents. If we were already connected on information, we could change direction on some streets depending on the necessity of the moment. For example, we did in an avenue called Corrientes, that is a big avenue here, where you have a lot of theaters, a lot of libraries, and it's open at night. It's a very livable avenue. But during the day, this avenue is in the middle of the city center. A lot of people working there and moving around it. And it changes a lot the activity that you have during the day or at night. So what we decided, but this was quite expensive because it took a lot of infrastructure work, but I think in the future we can do it without this kind of infrastructure, is that we decided to change the infrastructure of three lanes of this avenue so that at 7 p.m., from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m., you have a pedestrian area in these three lines. And during the day, when we need these lines for buses and cars, it's open to buses and cars. So this is easy for us that we work in transportation to think about, but sometimes it takes a lot of time and money to do it if we have to do it with infrastructure.
Paula, as a veteran in this space with all these experiences under your belt, what are the key factors that made your mobility plan so successful?
I think, I always say this, but it's very important for all the offices, agencies of transportation to be able to talk and convince the political leader. We talked a lot with the mayor to make him understand what we were thinking, what were the changes that we were expecting, and how people could really had a big and important and positive impact with this kind of plan. That was the key. Because you need not only money, of course, of the government to do all of this, but you need political support. Because some of these changes now seem very easy and great, but it was not that easy to do this 230 kilometers of cycle paths. It was not that easy to do the first lines of BRT. It was complicated for people to understand. It was a big change. Sometimes you have a lot of media talking against it, or a lot of powerful people that move in general in cars that are talking against it. And still we have a lot. When we go to new neighborhoods with the cycle path, we still have people that criticize it. So it's important that you have a support of the political leader. Then another thing that is very important is communication. Communicate the plan also to the city, to the citizens. They should be on board in the way that they understand what you are doing, why you are doing this, when is the work infrastructure is going to finish. Then you have to communicate a lot with the media and journalists. And this is a one-on-one situation, and it takes a lot of time. For me, today, talking to the media takes a lot of time. It takes practice. You have to know how to do it. You have to be willing to expose a little bit yourself. But it's very important because this is the people that are going to talk to the community all the time. And if they don't understand or if they don't like you, it's going to be really a mess. And then also, of course, talking to the neighbors. And this is another kind of communication. It's a one-on-one. We always, when we do the cycle path, we go and ring the bell on every neighborhood and explain what is going to happen. Then we go also when it's finished to show them how it works, to give them maps of the network, engaging a little bit the community. Also interesting when you are doing this kind of changes to have meetings with the neighbors and try to design together things that you're going to do. When you are doing different kinds of things, more like local things, I think it's very useful way to implement these kind of changes is to build together a little bit the plan. And then, of course, talking to different kind of organizations, commercial organizations, in Avenida Corrientes. In that case, it was, for example, community of theater. Well, you have to talk to this community in particular to understand their needs, their timetable, when do people go into the theater, when they go out, what do they need, why it would be interesting for them, for people to stay in the avenue and not just go into the theater and go away. So you meet with theaters, you meet with the restaurants. It's not easy, of course. It takes a lot of time, but it's part of our job. And it makes the difference when you do it like that.
Thanks, Paula, for sharing these pearls of wisdom. Just to close off this episode of Moving Cities, our listeners would love to know, what is your personal vision for the future of mobility? How do you imagine it to look like in the next 10 to 20 years?
This is my personal opinion. I don't know if everybody here thinks the same. But for me, the future of mobility is totally people mobility, the way that more walking, more biking, no cars flying, please. Autonomous vehicles, okay, for some particular things. They're autonomous, they're still vehicles. So I think we really need to start rethinking the mobility on people-centered mobility, trying to make shorter trips. You wouldn't need a car to do that. Try to stay connected with the people around you. So I really don't see this kind of future mobility in flying drones and autonomous vehicles. I think it's very interesting to understand how can these autonomous vehicles work. And we are doing some workshops with Harvard because we want to stay, of course, informed of what is going on, try the technology and see how this kind of technology can be used for our good. And this is great. And of course, thinking about road safety, when we have more sensors, it will be more sure for people to move, more secure for people to move in the city. So it's great to use this kind of advanced technology, but always thinking on people and how we want to live together. And I think we need to live together much more in contact with each other. This is the key of society, of democracy, of for us being happy and healthy, I don't know. Technology has to be used as a way of support this kind of community, not to separate us. I'm not that amazed by this kind of technology. I'm more amazed about people's way of thinking and emotions. And I think we need to start reconnecting with that. We see all these changes in climate, and it's really terrifying. But also not just that, it's also how people are unhappy sometimes. And you have a lot of technology, you have a lot of money, a lot of things, and this really don't make you happy. I think people are much more happy when they're really in contact with each other, and it doesn't mean you need technology for that.
Paula, I think you've shared with us a very critical and important perspective about just how significant the human factor is in all of these ongoing discussions about the future of mobility. At its core, mobility is about human connection and about giving people a means to connect to people and places. So thank you as well for bringing in the gender lens that often gets lost or subsumed by the sexy technology and gadgets that may not serve the actual needs of different population segments the way they're intended to, especially that of women. So like you said, at the end of the day, the city needs to be a place that brings joy and happiness to its citizens. And this is all different groups. So we're so grateful for the time that you spent with us on Moving Cities today. We hope that you continue to inspire others with your excellent work you've completed for your city so far. You've been listening to Moving Cities, a podcast on smart cities and the future of mobility brought to you by Eden Strategy Institute. Do subscribe to Moving Cities on your chosen podcast listening platform as we dive deeper into the big questions about all things mobility and the city. We'd love to hear what you thought about this week's episode, so don't forget to rate and review Moving Cities. You can also join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/Eden Strategy Institute. Thanks for coming along this journey with us. Till next time.